Then the financial crisis hit home. So we'd seen sort of signs of the crisis evolving in early 2007. I'm sure you'll have learned about Bear Stearns and shuttering their fund. And then in the summer of 2007, Q started to form outside Northern Rock. And there's a great irony, actually, that my boss, who at that time had 5 years of experience and who had effectively built the book into what it was, handed in his resignation just as Q's were forming outside Northern Rock. And what we'd already seen in the lead up to that point was quite a lot of our sort of middle management. So all the people who were in Mike Foster's class, these guys who joined the bank in 2001 and 2000, 2002, who had basically in the post-merger period. So if you look at most investment banks, you kind of go from 1998 until about 2002. There's this process of lots of merger activity as the banks consolidated and got bigger. And there's a group of people who came into the banks at that period who ended up building a lot of the products that are still there today. And anyway, those people, you know, tended to be graduates in about 2001, 2002. And Mike Foster was one of those, my former boss. And he left UBS at that exact point. Now, UBS had a chance, a choice as to whether to replace him. Now, myself and my colleague who remained between us had 30 months experience of trading. For one reason or another, UBS decided to leave us to manage this $50 billion book on our own.
So it was $50 billion, and there was just two guys, yourself and one other person.
Yep.
Solely responsible?
Yep.
Okay.
With 30 months experience. And a lot of my reflections have come, you know, since going to prison and after the loss and having the time to stop and think. But, you know, back then, it was a great sort of, you know, we were shit scared, I'll be honest, because the market was starting to act in a very, it was already behaving in a very unpredictable way, but it was becoming more and more unpredictable. And our job was to provide protection to our clients through the products we were trading on our book. And we didn't have the experience of Mike Foster who'd left. Plus, it was a moment in which, you know, when you're under a ton of pressure in that type of environment, what you really need is, A, to rely on your relationships with the people in your institution who can help you solve problems. But you also need to have leverage yourself in order to demand the resources that you require to manage the risk that you've got on your plate. And the problem we had was that with 30 months experience, being quite junior, we didn't have that leverage. Obviously, we didn't realize that at the time. But what would happen is that through the crisis, it started to become clear that we didn't have those tools, the leverage and access to resources that we required. But our job was to manage the book. So what would happen is that you'd kind of come in on some days, and you would run your profit and loss for the previous day, because it wasn't real time, it was sort of backwards looking for the previous day. And you know, you'd run your P&L and suddenly you would see that you were, you know, maybe down $5 or $6 million. There was this difficult period where, especially through the first quarter of 2008, where you would be constantly buffeted by this P&L. And eventually, you know, there's only so many times you can go to your boss and say, "Oh, we're down $5 million today. We don't really know why. I promise you we'll have an explanation by the end of the day." And then eventually you go to him at the end of the day and you say, "Look, Ronnie, I'm really sorry, but we're down $5 million. And I think it's because of this reason or that reason." And there were a multitude of reasons for that. All of that was based on the complexity in the book. It might be because you priced a dividend wrong. And the interesting thing about dividends is that in a crisis environment, when institutions or corporations need to protect their capital base, they cut their dividends. Now, of course, I never did a finance degree, so I didn't know that. And there was no one around us who had that experience, so we didn't know that. But to make it even worse, it was a very complex book with 4,000 different stocks on it. So in order to know the dividend profile of every single stock on the book, you had to have an analyst on every single stock on the book. So if you came in and you were down $5 million, it tended to be because you didn't have an analyst on that stock and the company had just cut their dividend. And you would only find out at the point when there was a difference between where you were marking your assets to market and where the curve was marking on the theoretical value. And over we got hit like this. And eventually we went to the bosses and we're like, look, the problem is that, you know, we've got $5 billion of FTSE mid-cap. There's 250 stocks in it. Our clients are the likes of Aviva and Legal in general, the biggest pension funds in the world. And they've got way more experience than us. And they're having our eyes out, basically. And, you know, you sort of tell this story to your boss and your boss would go, well, you guys are the experts. You need to figure out a way to resolve this. Because, of course, the problem, the real problem was that the book was so complex. And having lost Mike, there was no one left who understood how the book was run. We were left to try and find a solution to that.
So just to get one thing straight, you did computing or something at
computer science and management. Yes,
computer science and management. So you had no finance training. You joined UBS, and a few years later, you're running a $50 billion book.
Yeah.
In that time, you'd had no formal finance training.
No. So I'd had the basics of how to price a bond, how the equity market works.
A training session, or was it something like me telling you over coffee on the back of an envelope?
As an operations graduate, when we first came in, we had 2 weeks of fundamentals, so bond and equity fundamentals, but that was it. And then the rest of it was learning on the job.
Okay. So you went to your bosses and you say you've got these problems that you've just described.
Yep.
At any point, did you ask for more staff?
We did. So eventually what happened was that in December of 2007, we were given a junior, a guy called Alex, who was just a kid. He's 21 years old, super young, really, really, like, super intelligent, but with none of the resilience that you need as a trader. So our job was to, A, teach him how the book worked, but B, instill in him the ideas of how to be resilient on a trading floor. And it took us a lot of work. Me especially, because I tended to be the teacher on the desk. And by September of 2008, Alex was performing brilliantly, like literally brilliantly. The problem is that UBS was the worst hit of the European banks through the subprime crisis. We were bailed out by the Swiss taxpayer to the tune of $60 billion. And they needed to cut costs. So
in 2011, you lost $2.3 billion, but in 2008, they needed a taxpayer-funded bailout of $60 billion, 6-0.
That's correct, yeah. Okay. They needed to cut costs, so they fired Alex.
So now it was back to the two of us.
So it was back to the two of us. The worst thing about firing Alex, and quite a few of his grad class, was that we didn't save any money doing it, right? Like, you know, you could have fired one MD for every 10 juniors you fired, managing director, sorry. But we needed to show that we were cutting heads. And for whatever reason, we didn't cut any MDs. We cut the juniors instead. And so we lost Alex. So we're back to two of us on the desk. And what that resulted in was that basically what we now had was an institution that was really top heavy with a lot of senior managers. And it was generally the senior managers who either hadn't made enough money or hadn't saved enough money in the boom years. So basically the ones who weren't quite as good as the others that remained. And then there was this big gap where the likes of Mike Foster used to be. And then there was my class, so myself and John and a few at our level. And then the juniors underneath us, who over that year of that first year of the crisis had learned that we sacrificed so much time to teach, they were cut out. And so suddenly you had this top heavy institution and us. And there's nothing in between us and there's nothing below us. So we had a lot of work, but a lot of responsibility as well, because as I explained, the complexity of the way the book and other books ran meant that senior management just couldn't understand what we were doing.
So how did you cope in terms of how many hours a day did you have to work, or how did you
I think between the summer of 2007 when Mike left and sometime in 2009, mm-hmm. I didn't have a single day off work. I was working something like, yeah, between 15 and 20 hours a day.
And what about weekends?
So weekends, Saturdays, you kind of go home and be a bit comatose, mm-hmm. and wash some clothes and fall asleep in front of the TV. Sunday wouldn't be much different. but by, it was a global book. We constantly had positions. So by 11 o'clock when, in the evening on a Sunday, when the US markets and futures and currencies are about to open, you would start watching the market again. And it was week in, week out like that for quite a long time. As you can imagine, it makes it very difficult to have human relationships outside of work.